Moving on to another light topic. Agenda Papers Series 4 on hyperinflation, and I'm going to hand over to Von Sohn.
So we now move on to Agenda Papers 4 to 4C, which analyse comment received on the free tentative agenda decision published in September on the translation of a hyperinflationary foreign operation. I will start with Agenda Paper 4A, which discusses how an entity presents any differences that arise on restating and translating the results and financial position of its hyperinflationary foreign operation. The committee received 16 comment letters. 5 respondents agreed with the committee's technical analysis and tentative conclusion. Other respondents disagreed with the committee's analysis and say that in addition to the 2 methods outlined in the tentative agenda decision, IFRS standards also allow an entity to recognize both the restatement and translation effects directly in equity. Several of those respondents recommend undertaking standard setting. Paragraphs 18 to 36 analyze comments on whether an entity recognizes the restatement and translation effects directly in equity. Paragraphs 38 to 55 analyze comments on whether the committee should add this matter to its standard setting agenda. On the basis of our analysis, we continue to agree with the committee's technical analysis and tentative conclusion. Accordingly, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision subject to changes that are discussed in paragraph 36 and 37 of the paper. I will now pause here and ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the agenda decision as set out in Appendix A to this paper.
Brian.
Thank you. Given my comments in the September meeting and the Cambridge comment letter, which is prominently placed at the top of the list of comment letters, you're probably expecting me to have comments on this. I continue to think that the combined effect or the combined requirements of IAS 29 and IAS 21 are not clear on this particular point. I think the logic of the staff analysis, if taken to its ultimate conclusion, drives towards a split presentation, which I think we can see from the research that nobody does, and a number of people question the value of. If you move away from that, I'm not clear that the references are sufficient to prohibit the combined adjustment being in equity. I think that the references, the previous reference to paragraph 41 of IS 21 and the new reference to paragraph 7 of IS 1 provide kind of circumstantial evidence, but are not sufficient to change my previously expressed view that I do not think the combined effect of these standards prohibits, absolutely prohibits, what the paper calls the direct equity effect.
Bruce?
In a lot of ways, I actually agree with what Brian's saying, and I'll tell you why. I don't necessarily dislike the answer. I'm just not convinced the words get me there. And I'll tell you, the main thing to me was that when we talk about the paragraph 41 specifying on 39C, it clearly talks about hyperinflationary when a currency is not hyperinflationary, and then we just say, well, we think it is. It's applicable. That to me is quite a big leap when the wording actually specifies that it's something that's outside of that. And where's that? Not necessarily that I disagree with the answer, but from the stand setting point of view, I'm just not convinced that we can say, well, when the wording specifically says one thing, we're just going to say, well, in the committee's view, it's the other. If we genuinely believe that, then we need to do that through an amendment or an interpretation. That to me is way outside the scope of what we can do in an agenda decision. So I guess from my point of view, whether you agree or disagree at the onset, you know, whether you can do the split or how you're going to put it, I think is there. My concern is I just don't think the wording is going to get us in either way to any of those answers, and I think we need to do a lot more than an agenda decision on this.
I mean, if it's helpful just in clarify, because I know you brought up, Bruce, the reference to paragraph 41 and paragraph 39 of IS 21, and I just want to make it clear at least what the agenda decision is saying, the rationale that's used in the paper and therefore in the agenda decision for saying why recognising directly inequity we think is not allowed in the standard. When the agenda decision refers to that, by the way, which is at the bottom of page 20, it doesn't. The rationale for saying why we think you cannot recognise directly inequity has nothing to do with paragraph 41 and paragraph 39. Mm. It's wholeheartedly to do with the fact that we're saying an exchange difference meets the definition of income and expenses. And because it meets the definition of income and expenses, that's the basis for saying why you can't recognise it directly inequity. And that's the sole basis for that. When the agenda decision then refers to paragraph 41, it's done solely in the context of having decided you cannot recognise it directly in equity because it's an item of income and expense. Yes. Do I present it in OCI, or alternatively do I present it in P&L? And then what we're trying to say is we're not saying you directly apply paragraph 41. We're saying we just think that an explanation that's sitting in paragraph 41 kind of sort of is equally relevant in the context of.
And I accept that. So I said to you, I don't dislike what you've got on that. But what my problem with that is that when you start referring me to paragraphs that then specifically refer to things that are outside of what we're talking about, my worry is, are we reading more into the words that are explicitly in the standard than we should be? I mean, then paragraph 41, by your thinking, shouldn't have referred to whether some, well, was it 39? I mean, we shouldn't have referred to whether something is hyperinflation or not.
No, but
we shouldn't have those words in the paragraph.
Only then. Using, I think Katrina's just saying that it helps you think about what the nature of the income and expenses for the location question.
Yeah.
But in the context of what we're discussing, we're saying that our view is that that applies.
So do you agree that, we're saying we think income and expenses are items of income and expense. Exchange differences meet the definition of income and expenses. Do you agree with that?
No, I do.
So then I think that means you would agree with the last paragraph at the bottom of page 20? So you would agree that we can conclude, therefore, that you cannot recognise directly inequity?
I do agree with it.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying to you. I don't dislike where we've got to. I just worry that...
She's asking you a different question. She's saying, do you agree that there's enough words to make those two statements?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So an expense and it can't go to equity. So your point is the discussion around the OCI versus P&L.
That's it, yes.
Okay. Bob.
I agree with the staff and I agree with the agenda decision. I got there similar to the way staff did. The way I read translation adjustments are always in comprehensive income. They are an income amount. They cannot go to equity. I think there's probably stronger arguments for the split approach than combined, but I'm not going to stand in the way of the combined. It's more practical. But I just, when I do combine it, though, I can't get to then, because of the translation piece, to put it all into equity. It has to go to then all to income.
Okay. Thank you. Carsten.
So I do agree with the conclusion. I think what Petrina just explained, that was I was going to make a similar comment, that these meet the definition of income and expenses. So I think I feel that perhaps more emphasis should be given to that argument rather than paragraphs 39 to 41, which in fact explicitly scope out hyperinflationary economies. So I think it's more the general principle that applies to foreign currency gains and losses. I don't see why, just because an entity is a hyperinflationary economy, you all of a sudden no longer have foreign currency gains and losses. So I think it's just the general principle that these are items of income and expense and should be recognized in accordance with the principles in IS 21, which leads you to the same answer. I just think we shouldn't emphasize paragraphs 39 to 43, or 43 it is. Just a different argument, but I do agree with the conclusion.
Okay, thank you. Bertrand.
I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. I have nothing more to say. I think the draft agenda decision is pretty clear. We can surely amend it, but I think there's really no need to go. I don't know what you have in mind, Bruce, but I think an agenda decision is probably sufficient to cover this issue. I'm not sure it raised. I understand that there was probably diversity in practice, and some preparers did something else. But from the application of the requirements, as explained by the staff in the agenda paper, and even after having received the comment letters, I think we what is contained in the agenda decision is sufficient to cover the issue and to answer to those preparers.
Young Su.
No, I agree with the staff, I also as a conclusion. As Petunia said, the IAS 21 has no reference to active with the exchange difference. So I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. However, I have one concern. My concern is about the split approach to split method. The split method approach has a big problem, one conceptually and the other one mathematically. The conceptual problem is pointed by the comment letter, the inflation and changes in exchange rate economically tightly related. And separating those two out are not meaningful. So conceptually, split method is not proper. Mathematically, also, it is almost impossible to completely separate the restriction effect and the calculation effect. There is always some kind of overlaps between those two. And depending on where the overlap part is assigned, one of the two differences is going to be overstated or understated. For example, the overlap part is included in the translation effect, but then translation effect will be overstated. If the overlap part is included in the restatement effect, the restatement effect is going to be overstated. So what I'm trying to say is that the split method is not proper conceptually or practically or mathematically. So that is my concern. If I wrap up my concern, I'm not saying that we have a problem in supporting two alternative methods. I have no problem with this. We can support two alternative methods. But what I'm trying to say is that we are supporting that input is not proper. That not proper method is the explicit method. So that is the concern I have.
Thank you. Does anybody else on the screen want to come in? Guy?
I was going to also indicate I agree with the analysis of the staff in the agenda paper. The one observation that I would have liked to have made in the tentative agenda decision is in respect of the split approach, acknowledge in some way the lack of usefulness of going down the split model, recognizing the interrelationships between inflation and exchange. So almost a bit of a warning about the use of that method. That is perhaps difficult to do, having established it can't be precluded under standards. But, I think as it's apparent from the comments, split approach is information that would provide. So my only observation was whether it might be possible to add some sort of warning in the tentative.
I guess personally I'd caution against that, particularly when it's already been out for comment, because my recollection is in the past where we've decided two different readings were possible, we've got pretty severe responses in terms of us giving a steer on what we thought were better answers, which we probably should respect, even though I don't necessarily disagree. Goro?
Yeah, thank you. I also support the staff analysis and recommendations. And from the user's point of view, that as far as that meet the definition of income or expenses, that I think that this should be presented in OCI. And I personally, as I said in September, that I personally prefer that the split approach. But anyway, that would be very costly, and also that is not observed in the practice. And also that I would prefer OCI approach to the direct equity approach. And anyway, that this decision would help that the practice to converge, so that from the user's point of view, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro. Makoto?
Yeah, thank you very much. So that I do not object to the conclusion and also staff analysis, but just one general comment as an enforcement regulator's view is that for the consistent application, it's ideal to avoid any kind of, that multiple options in both all standards. So as I mentioned, that I do not object to the conclusion, but for the not focusing on this area, but for the very general area, we should avoid any kind of multiple options. And just one suggestion from my side is that I understand it's not the scope of the this committee. I think this could be handled by the ISB and also IFAS Foundation, but one suggestion is that post-implementation review should pick up this kind of issues, because I understand that the post-implementation review usually focusing on the newly established standard, not focusing on the old standards like this IS21 and IS29. But if the post-implementation review will cover those old established standards, maybe it's easy to find this kind of issue and also solve the problem. Thank you.
Bruce.
Thanks. I just want to come back on the point I was making, because just looking through it again. I mean, the only sentence I'm really concerned about is the one at the top of page 21 that says there, the committee observed that this explanation also applies to the functional currency as hyperinflation. I guess the only challenge is there any way to soften that or do something? Because my concern about that sentence is, we're really saying that paragraph 41 is telling us that that is applicable to non-hyperinflationary economies, and in one sentence we're saying, hang on, we're actually changing what that says, and we're saying actually it is applicable to hyperinflationary economies. When IS21 was issued, it was clearly felt that that should include the fact that the sentence says in a currency, a hyperinflationary economy, there's not hyperinflationary. So I just that's the part that gets to me. So I'm just feeling that we're really adding to paragraph 41 in that.
And that's what I've been sort of whispering to Katrina between committee comments. I wonder whether we can reword that paragraph to make it clear that we're observing that the explanation. We're not saying the paragraph supply.
So I don't even a thought I had was maybe that we could reword it to quote the explanation, to focus more on the explanation, so we could say, quote whether we say paragraph 41 or IS21 explains that these types of exchange differences, include that quote which is explains that these exchange differences are not recognised in profit or loss because those changes have little or no direct effect on the
profit. Something my concern is when we quote the paragraph which says currency is not hyperinflation, and then we say, well, the committee determined that this does, we're contradicting what's in the standard.
So maybe if we quote the explanation, which is what we're focusing on, as opposed to...
Mike Morris, but Jeff, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Can I get a show of hands on support for the agenda decision with that rewording to make it more clear that we're not saying that paragraph, which clearly doesn't apply, does apply, but it's the explanation that we're focusing on. With that change, can I get a show of hands? Well, Carsten, did you want to ask a question? I thought you were voting.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I completely agree with Bruce that change should be made. I just still think that we should probably emphasize a bit more the general principle of gains and losses, IS1, IS7, because I think there's, even if with that change, which I support, I think there's still too much emphasis on paragraphs 39 to 41 rather than, I also object to the notion that because it's not specifically prohibited in IS 21 or 29. To recognize something directly negatively, we have this general principle, which is So I guess I'm suggesting, should we highlight more paragraph 7 of IS1 and the general principle of income of translating foreign currency exchange and losses as income and expense, and perhaps delete or at least take out the parts that refer to 39, as you also said, right? Because 39 actually says it does not apply, right? So I'm just in terms of the reasoning, I'm fully supportive of the conclusion, but I think that should be highlighted.
So I think we should take out the reference to 39. Yes, yeah. Mary.
Yes, Preston, if you look at page 20, the two paragraphs at the bottom of the page, particularly the very last one, because exchange differences meet the definition of income and expense. Yeah. Isn't that the point that you're focused on?
I'd rather use that than sort of bring in a general principle that might suggest.
I'm just worried about paragraph 39.
Yeah, we'll take the reference to 39 out. I think that's confusing rather than elusive.
That would be
helping illuminate. Take that's the word I'm looking for.
Get rid of it.
Okay, so we'll take that reference to 39 out. Can I get a show of hands for support for the agenda decision with that? Yes, Young Su, sorry. Want to come in?
Can we put some kind of warning against the point mapping of gender distinction, as Guy said?
I can't hear you, sorry. Could you start again?
Can we put some kind of warning against the split method in the agenda decision?
No.
As Guy said?
No. We have to keep the agenda decisions have to be factual. They need to be telling us what the standards say. And so I think we have to keep it as it is, and it's particularly because it's already been out for comment. So, no, I don't think we can make that suggestion. Sorry, Young Su. I think we need to keep basically the agenda decision as is, with the softening of the reference to paragraph 41 and a removal of the reference to paragraph 39. With that, can I get a show of hands?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Everyone. Okay. Now we're going to agenda paper 4B, which discusses how an entity presents the cumulative amount of exchange differences that have arisen before the foreign operation becomes hyperinflationary. We refer to this amount as being the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve. The committee received 17 comment letters. 5 respondents agree with the committee's technical analysis and tentative conclusion. Some of the other respondents agree with the committee analysis, but comment on the measurement of the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve, while some others disagree with the committee's analysis and conclusion. Several respondents recommend the committee undertake standard setting. Paragraph 16 to 52 discuss the comments together with our analysis and recommendation. Paragraph 31 to 42 explain why we continue to agree with the committee's conclusion that an entity presents the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve in a separate component of equity until disposal of the foreign operation. Those paragraphs also explain that the agenda decision only addresses the presentation of that reserve. It is not intended to imply that an entity is prevented from remeasuring the said reserve. On the basis of our analysis, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision subject to changes discussed in paragraph 38 and 51. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the agenda decision as set out in Appendix A to the paper.
Let Bertrand done first this time.
I agree with
the staff analysis and conclusion, and to the add-on that were put both in the analysis and in the wording in the agenda decision. I think to maybe to answer a bit what Yongsu said earlier, I think the split accounting method is above all useful when you first apply IS-29 and you first have to apply IS-29 to a hyperinflationary economy. And so I think there the in the agenda paper 4B, the split accounting method is really useful in this instance.
Brian.
Thank you. I think on the main question in the paper, I think the answer to 4B is wholly dependent on the answer to 4A. So on the basis of the committee's quite substantial vote in favour of 4A, I think that drives the answer to 4B. I just had a very specific observation on the agenda decision. It's the penultimate paragraph on page 18 and the reference to partial disposals. And I just wondered whether that captured precisely what happens in paragraph 48C, particularly if there were non-controlling interests. Perhaps there are other things that happen on that. So I'm afraid I don't have a specific drafting suggestion, but I'm not sure the current drafting is precisely accurate, particularly when there's a minority.
Thank you, Brian, and you're right, by the way, in the sense that in addressing partial disposal, which obviously was a comment, and we felt we should, there's an opening sentence in 48C that deals with sort of a reclassification to do with non-controlling interest that wouldn't mean reclassifying to P&L. So what I would suggest we do there is just to cover off that situation. Potentially, we'll be able to put in a sort of X in brackets, a sort of quote what we quote without hopefully overcomplicating.
So still
mention all that we mention about partial disposal, but put in a except as specified in that paragraph, just to cover off that situation. That's kind of not relevant to what we're talking about, but you're absolutely right that as written, it wouldn't be strictly correct.
Always good to be correct. No other comments. So does that mean I can get a show of? Oh, sorry, Guy. Guy, you want to come in?
Yeah, thanks, Sue. I was. I agree with the paper. The one addition that I might suggest to the agenda decision is some sort of tie back to the first issue we just discussed, the 4A and the idea of the initial translation effects being subject to that same information in terms of exchange difference. So just make that link back to 4A in the 4B agenda decision.
I, for example, flagging that there's a related agenda decision or something as subtle as simple as that.
Yes, so to highlight that the initial effects of the accounting when the foreign operation becomes hyperinflationary are tied to your decisions that are going to be made under the issue in paragraph 4A as well.
Okay. I'm going to get a vote on the agenda decision as drafted with the clarification following from Brian's comments so that it's actually correct, which is always good. Could I get a show of hands on that, and then I'll get a show of hands on the cross-reference suggestion that Guy made just to make sure everybody's comfortable with that. So could I get a show of hands on the agenda decision with the clarification of the link to paragraph 48C of IAS-21? Okay, so that's everybody. And are people comfortable with the express reference to 4A, the agenda decision from 4A in this agenda decision?
Could you explain again the amendment, please?
I wanted to ask a question about that, and Vince, I'm looking at the paragraph of the agenda paper 4B, tentative agenda decision, and does the does your decision about whether to take a combined or a split approach end up impacting the amount, the cumulative amount of the exchange difference?
Yes, there should be a consistency.
So, in essence, it's baked into the determination of that amount. It's not a separate election.
Yes.
No. Because what you do when you transition to IS-29, you should then subsequently, when you apply 29 on an ongoing basis.
Because 4A will determine how much you end up recognizing as the amount of the exchange difference as a separate component of equity.
Correct.
So to that point, I mean, I'm not personally, I don't feel like it's a concern to cross-reference another one, another agenda decision, but I think it's hardwired because that phrase, the amount of the exchange difference is a separate component of equity, will already reflect the determination that you made in 4A.
So you don't think it's necessary?
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. There seems to be a general shaking of heads, so agreeing with Mary's proposition. Is that fair? Okay. All right, so we'll leave that then. All right. Sorry, Guy.
This is whether an entity restates the comparative amounts presented for its hyperinflationary foreign operation in some specified circumstances. The committee received 12 comment letters. 6 respondents agreed with the committee's decision not to add the matter to its standard setting agenda. The other respondent did not disagree with the committee's observation of a lack of diversity, but they suggested the committee analyze the matter or undertake standard setting. Paragraphs 10 to 26 analyze the comment received. On the basis of our analysis, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision with minor changes to reflect our updated analysis and findings. I will now ask whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the agenda decision as set out in Appendix A to the paper.
The decision.
You agree with the decision?
I have no comments to add.
Any comments, anybody? Or?
We asked to discuss this one. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can I just get a show of hands?
Maybe just, sorry, a quick follow up. I would have quoted paragraph 42B, because and it's a general comment I have. I think the reading of the agenda decision should be self-explanatory. So, and there, I think it's important to effectively quote paragraph 42B, because it's an important part of the agenda decision. So I would have quoted it extensively. Maybe that's 3-4 lines to the agenda decision. I'm not sure it's a problem.
So if we just want to quote the paragraph, obviously that's up to the committee, and I don't see harm. I think the only reason we didn't initially suggest it is this is an agenda decision that doesn't actually include technical analysis or a technical conclusion. It's simply saying it's not widespread. So I think that's the reason.
I agree. I totally agree with that, but you're just referring to paragraph 42B, so quoting it is not a big add to it, but then it's rather explicit. Let's put it, I mean, personally what I see is if you had analyzed technically the answer, having read paragraph 42B, I would have probably concluded the same as it is worded in the current agenda decision, even though you have not technically performed an analysis. So that's why I think there it's important, because the words, to me at least, maybe not to all people, but at least to me, the words are quite clear. When you read 42B, you have an answer.
Young, did somebody on the screen have their hand up? No? Okay, so with that, so we're going to make a... Do you want to call it? I'll call the vote on the words as in the appendix, shall I? Yes, yes. For approval.
Yes, yes.
Can I get a show of hands for who supports the agenda decision as worded?
As worded.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You mean as worded without the adding?
Yes, without the amendment. Yeah.
But I could agree with the agenda decision as worded. I would better agree on an amended agenda decision. I mean, I agree on both. So I have two hands. I vote twice. I mean, I have no problem.
I'm with Bertrand. I would prefer a reference. Okay. But I've got everybody except Bertrand.
Don't you want to instead ask the question the other way around?
You can probably guess the answer.
I don't. Okay. Bertrand.
If you are uncomfortable in adding 42B, fine.
I'm not uncomfortable, Bertrand. I'm about to be kind. Seize the moment. So I'll take a show of hands with Bertrand's amendment. Can I get a show of hands? Got less votes.
Then you can.
Okay.
Leave it back
can to I the... go back to with as drafted? So as shown without amendment. Could I get a show of hands, please? 13. Okay, good. Thank you very much. All right, so we've been very efficient.